Today is December 22nd, 2021. This is episode number 565. Jeff, gamut, that is not a palindrome, sir. Not a palindrome. It's a number. 565.
It is a palindromic number.
Is it? No, it's not.
It is. Yes, it is.
That's correct. That is pedantically correct.
It is. Since you are mostly pedantic.
Mostly.
Yeah, so it is not a palindrome. You are correct. It is a palindromic number.
Huh. Of the Apple Context Machine, it's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of the Mac Observer, that I think I mentioned that. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note over at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That's macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you to our Facebook group. By the way, spoiler alert, Jeff Gamut is once again joining me because he's awesome.
Oh, well, now you spoiled it for me. I'm out.
That's what am I thinking? What am I thinking? Also, by the way, speaking of what are they thinking? ZocDoc and Wealthfront are sponsoring this particular show, and I'm going to tell you more about them a little bit later.
Cool.
Yeah. Right. All right. Listen, Jeff, I think that we are both on a tight time frame today, by which I mean I am, and that's all I care about. So let's...
All right. So run the sponsors, and and I'll tell you how great it's been to be here.
No. We do have a couple topics. We should jump to it. And honestly, like, it's Christmas week in resurging COVID times. So we have some topics. That's pretty good.
It is.
It's pretty good. Yeah. That's pretty good. All right. You asked me, Jeff, at the top of the show. No, before the show.
So would that be the tippy top of the show?
The tippy top of the show. An interesting question. And you said, have I changed the way that I'm listening to music? And that got me thinking. And then you started explaining why you were asking. And I thought that would be a fantastic thing for us to talk about, because we do both have changes, and they're different kinds of changes. Mm-hmm. So, Jeff, tell us about how your music listening has changed, and I want to hear like time frames and like relative to what.
Okay. All right. So my primary music listening for a long time was my own library. Mm-hmm. So that would be CDs that I had ripped old, and then stuff that I had bought from online services, like at the time, the iTunes Music Store.
Sure. Or Bootcamp. Bootcamp.
Bootcamp. Yes.
Some Bootcamp. What's it called?
It's Bandcamp. Bandcamp. Yes. Bandcamp. Yes. Yeah. And that was it. So I would listen through the speakers I had at my desk or on an iPod. And I noticed over time that my music consumption habits changed after the original HomePod came out. So,
The big HomePod.
Yeah. The OG HomePod.
Right. The real HomePod.
Yeah. Yes. So what changed was over time, I started listening to mostly, almost exclusively streaming music as opposed to what's in my own library. And then that also transitioned into, I'm not listening to specific artists. I'm just picking.
So you're not listening, like, let alone specific albums.
Yeah, I'm not listening to specific albums. Very rarely. I very rarely listen to specific artists. I pick a musical genre, or I pick my friend's playlist. Because, of course, I have several friends on Apple Music, and they have their shared playlists, and then I will just let that stuff play.
Okay.
And the other thing that I realized just recently is I almost never listen to music in stereo, proper stereo anymore, because it's just streaming from one HomePod.
That, yeah, I guess that is an unintended consequence, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, right. So of course, now I'm wanting to find someone who wants to offload an OG HomePod just so I can try out stereo with this thing, you know, after all these years and the product's been discontinued.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually, by the way, I'm tense about the day. Tense about the day that my HomePod stops being updated or that it breaks.
Yeah. Maybe I should just get another HomePod Mini and set up a stereo pair that way.
Yeah, but the thing is that the HomePod Mini does not sound as good as the HomePod.
This is true.
It does not. Like I have a HomePod Mini set up in my kitchen. I am using two HomePods on my TV, left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time I want to hear any music coming out of the HomePod Mini is when it's a third speaker. In that part, you know, the way my house is, I've got, I have three floors, but each floor is small and long and narrow. Right. So like, you know, for me, the third HomePod is about, you know, basically filling up the kitchen a little more. When I'm cooking or something like that. I mean, yes, I'm lucky. But my point is that I have no idea where I'm going with this. My point is that I don't want to hear music coming out of the HomePod Mini by itself.
You know, I get that. And as you described how you're using your setup, I'm sort of doing the same thing. I have a HomePod Mini here in my office. Oh, I broke the illusion. When I'm back in my office and not in the studio,
there's
a HomePod Mini sitting there.
Right.
And my office and the living room are connected by a doorway, and the HomePod is in the living room. So I can play music on both, and then I have that kind of fuller sound because there's the Mini behind me and the OG HomePod in the other room. Still not stereo, because you can't pair those for stereo.
Oh, you can't do two Minis in stereo?
No, you can't do a HomePod and a HomePod Mini in stereo. Oh, God,
no, you wouldn't want to.
No. It'd be
off balance. Yeah, it'd be.
Yeah. But yes, you can do two HomePod Minis in stereo.
All right.
Which would be a much more economical way to do Apple Music streaming.
Yeah. You
know, since I can actually get one.
Right. So the bottom line being that I'm not looking forward to the day, and it will come, where the HomePod is no longer being supported by Apple, and you know, maybe years off, and or, you know, like the componentry starts breaking down or something like that. That's not going to be a fun day. All right, so all of that makes sense, and it sort of, I'm a person who can become set in their ways. For those who know me, I'm sure.
Really? You're shy.
Yes,
I am so glad I was sitting down.
Yes,
I seriously had no idea.
Yes, and it's possible I sort of, like, you know, like, it's not even so much set in my ways. It's like I want things to stay the same. I'm sure there's some psychological term for this kind of mindset. But my point is that for the longest time, I ripped all my music. I didn't want to listen to it being streamed because it wasn't good enough quality. And then I got my HomePods.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, HomePod has historically been better at playing music from Apple Music, which I do subscribe to. than it is from necessarily playing stuff on your album and or stuff in your library. And I had this moment where doing a device transition, I apparently threw away by mistake, deleted all of my ripped music, which had all been ripped in the lossless, the AAC format.
Oh, ouch.
And I still have my CDs and everything. And, but when, and here, I guess here's where this enters the conversation. You were asking me if anything's changed. Just this weekend, I was, putting up some bookshelves, and I still have a bunch of unpacked boxes in my office. And I was finally starting to put some things away, and I had my CD wallet, my old CD wallet with like 200 CDs in it, because I was going to re-rip all that music at some point. And I found myself carting that CD wallet up to the third floor to put in the closet, because I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to rip it. I don't want to take the several days necessary to re-rip that stuff, because in general, everything I'm listening to is on Apple Music. And that is,
do you even have a drive that you can play the CDs in?
Oh yeah, yeah, I do have, I have Apple's.
It's okay. Drive. So you have a super drive stashed away somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Stashed away because I haven't used it in forever. And it's literally stashed away. And that is a significant change for me. I mean, in part because of my, you know, like wanting to keep things the way they are, or the way they're supposed to be in my head. But also because it has become so easy to play streaming music from a mobile device. Oh, maybe that's because I don't travel very much.
Okay. Yeah, that would.
I used to enjoy having all of my music with me at all times. And that's become less of a thing, especially without the traveling. So I don't know. Things are definitely changing in my head, and I don't by any means think that I'm representative of folks. I don't know, maybe there's some other folks that are like going through a similar process as me, but I don't know. It's interesting. Apple Music has changed things. HomePod has changed things for me, for sure. I guess Siri has changed things for me, the way I listen to music too. So yeah.
Hey, did you turn on lossless audio for your HomePods?
You know, I did not know that I could do that. Can I do that?
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
It's a thing. Oh, let's do a learning moment for the studio audience.
Yeah, let's, please.
Okay. Grab your iPhone. I'm sure it's handy. And launch the Home app.
Okay, done.
Hold on, let me launch the Home app. Because I know I'll forget a step if I don't. All right, tap the home icon so that you can get to home settings. Mm-hmm. Then tap home settings.
Hold on. Home settings.
Down near the bottom has little gear.
Got it.
Okay. And see, now I'm glad that I brought up my iPhone, because I would have forgotten this step, which is the completely non-intuitive step. So now you have that sheet that shows all kinds of stuff about your HomeKit setup.
Yeah.
And it has people in there, and you are there in the list, presumably.
Yeah.
So tap on you.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Now you'll see a thing that says Apple Music in that whole list of stuff about you. Tap that.
Oh, look at that.
And now turn on lossless audio.
Lossless audio.
And if Dolby Atmos isn't on, well, go ahead and turn that on too.
I did, although I don't think I have a device supporting Dolby Atmos yet.
Yeah, but now you're ready when you do.
And that will be, by the way, what I replace my HomePods with on my TV, is actually getting a proper TV sound system. For what?
Nice.
In that I mentioned the fact that I was using HomePod on TV earlier. Nice. Interesting. So, lossless video, right? So that is going to be on what devices now?
On all of the HomePods that are visible in your home app.
And not on my iPhone or iPad or Mac?
Correct. This is just turning it on for your HomePods.
And that's so it's streaming from Apple with using some sort of streaming lossless format.
Yes, just like when you stream lossless to your iPhone, your iPad, or your Mac, now you can stream lossless to your HomePods. This doesn't work with AirPlay, to the best of my knowledge.
Got it.
But there you go. Now you have lossless turned on. And for the stuff you're streaming that's in a lossless format, it will sound better.
I would love to hear from folks about how their music listening has changed. And I will, of course, share it with Jeff. So you can write
yes, please.
acm@macobserver.com and tell us about your own experience. Or pop a note, pop a comment on the show notes. TMOs. You do that.
Yep. That's a thing. I'm sure.
That is a thing. Also a thing. ZocDoc. Has this ever happened to you? You need to see a doctor. You search. You find one that looks good. You wait on hold. You book an appointment. You rearrange your schedule. And when you finally go in, you find out, yeah, great. This doctor doesn't even take your insurance. It can be super frustrating. There's a solution. Just download the free ZocDoc app, the easiest way to find a great doctor and instantly book an appointment. With ZocDoc, you can search for local doctors who take your insurance, read verified patient reviews, and book an appointment in person or video chat. Never wait on hold with a receptionist again. Whether you need a primary care physician, a dentist, dermatologist, psychiatrist, eye doctor, or other specialist, ZocDoc has you covered. ZocDoc makes healthcare easy, and now is the time to prioritize your health. You can go to ZocDoc.com/ACM and download the ZocDoc app to sign up for free and book a top-rated doctor. Many are available as soon as today. That's ZocDoc.com/ACM. One more time, that's ZocDoc.com/ACM. Sign up for free and book a top-rated doctor. Jeff Gamet, how are you, sir?
Brian Chaffin.
How are you? I ask you a question. Answer the question. Answer the question, sir.
Yes, but it will cost more for that.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Our second topic for today is how we're using our iPads. And from the standpoint of like, to me, that is an ever evolving thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, so let's dive into it. How are you using your iPads today? And do you still have two iPads and do you still use them both?
I still have two iPads and I do use them both. Okay. So my iPad Pro, it's a 12.9-inch.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually changed over the last 2 years, how I use it.
Okay.
It was becoming increasingly my heavy use machine, or I don't want to say primary use machine, but I was using it a lot as my sole machine for a lot of things. And over the past 2 years, it's become more of a secondary machine with specific uses. Like, you know, like this is where I edit all of my video stuff.
Okay.
And as I'm talking through this, I get why this has changed. And it's because mobility isn't what it was 2 years ago. And specifically, I'm talking about when lockdowns started for the pandemics.
Yeah.
I wasn't going out from my office to traveling or to just work in like coffee shops.
Yeah.
Or or at the bar.
Yeah.
And I would always take my iPad Pro for that, and it was great because I could do everything I needed, and it was more compact and longer battery life and totally awesome. And I don't go to places very much.
No,
and I'm certainly not going to go sit in a coffee shop.
Currently, yeah. I look forward to getting back to that.
I do too. And, you know, honestly, the other day as I was out for a walk, I do a lot of walks just like around downtown Boulder, mm-hmm. just to be
which,
out.
Which, by the way, you document oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes on your Instagram feed.
That's true.
Which
yeah.
is Jay Gamet.
Yes. And yes, it is.
I mentioned this because I truly love your slice of life, slice of moments.
Well, thanks.
Photographs from Boulder on your Instagram feed. You were well worth following.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And there will be people that follow me now and they'll be like, yeah, Brian's right. And there'll be other people that will say things like, oh, this explains a lot about Brian and Jeff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I was lamenting the fact that a lot of places that I used to go are still closed or shut down permanently. Or they have limited access and doing things like just going on a whim, grabbing the iPad and going to the coffee shop to do some writing mm-hmm. or video editing. That's not a thing anymore. Mm-hmm. And I still use my iPad mini a lot, but I need to replace it. It's an iPad mini 4 and it's just slogging now.
Well, the reason why I asked this, and uh-huh. by the way, the new iPad mini is spiffy as can be.
Oh, I need one of those. Yeah, I covet the new iPad mini.
The reason why I asked this is because you had, a couple of years ago, at least, you had different things you were very specifically doing on different iPads.
Yes.
And you would often take both of your iPads with you to work on because you did have these different activities you were doing on both. Now, mm-hmm. has that changed?
It has. And again, it's because of the pandemic. Mm. Yeah, like going to the coffee shop and doing writing and stuff on the iPad Pro while doing the research on the iPad Mini. I mean that was a thing for me, and now since I'm just here, I've got a 34-inch screen in front of me. And when I say when I'm here, I mean when I'm not in the studio and I'm
right,
actually
of course. Yes.
in my place.
Yes, tap. You know,
34-inch screen in front of me, and yep. I, you know, and so I don't need to do the dual thing with smaller screens. Although I am lamenting the fact that we still aren't going to get universal control this year. That would change again how I use my iPads on a daily basis.
Right. Yeah. I see that we talked about that in last week's show. Right. I will actually include a link. I'm making a note of that. Include link to last sausage folks. Last week's show. Right.
Top men.
Right. And for me, Jeff, mm-hmm. here's the thing. I order a lot of Grubhub.
Okay.
I should stop ordering a lot of Grubhub. It's expensive.
But you go hungry if you don't, right?
It's essentially, right? Because, you know, actually I have to use that kitchen I mentioned. I prefer to order Grubhub on my Mac. I find it easier to navigate and read restaurant menus on my Mac than I do on my iPad. And this, despite the fact that I spend a lot of time on my iPad every day. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I'm afraid of the iPad, because that's not the case. But mm-hmm. when it comes to like, I guess part of it is the convenience of having multiple windows and multiple tabs open. That to me is something that is still better on a Mac than it is on an iPad.
I agree. I'm speculating that part of the problem is that so many of these online services that are doing the food processing or order processing, whatever, they don't have very good mobile responsive sites. And it makes it kind of a pain to use them on an iPhone and in some cases,
but everything's on the Grubhub site.
Yeah.
If you're ordering.
That's what I mean. These companies have failed at giving us quality mobile responsive sites. So you end up going to their desktop page so that you can get the experience that you need, as opposed to the mobile page where you're like, seriously, what a pain in the butt.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
And somewhere out there, there's a bunch of web designers that just know what. Just thank you for calling that out for us, and you're welcome.
Right. And don't get me wrong. I know that I'm, especially younger people. If there are younger folks that are listening to us, you know, they're like, "LOL, Mac." It's like, you know, I do everything on my phone. What are you talking about, an iPad, old man? And I get that too. And there are a lot of things though that I prefer, like especially when it comes to looking stuff up, like researching, like, you know, trying to find new sources of information. I love reading on my iPad for sure. I love reading on my iPad. But if I'm going to be sitting down with a browser in particular, and I'm going to end up opening a ton of windows, mm-hmm. I'm going to do that on my Mac. Yeah, like I do a lot of command clicking so that I can open something in a new tab, which is how I have all my browsers on my Mac set up to do. And you know, which is why, like, I don't know, I'm looking at Safari right now. What do I have? This is kind of a slow moment for me. I only have about 10 windows and probably only a net total of 60 or 70 tabs open. And that to me is just a lot faster than doing something on my iPad. It's same thing with the shopping. If I know what I want from like say Amazon or some other retailer, I don't mind ordering it from my iPad. But if I don't know what I want, I prefer to do that on my Mac. Does this match fit with you at all?
To a degree, yeah, I totally get what you're saying. Example for me, I do a lot of Amazon shopping, and before people are like, "Oh, always shop local, please." I totally get it, and I wish I could. If the stores actually carried the stuff that I wanted or needed to buy, hence Amazon. I use the Amazon app on my iPad and iPhone a lot, but when I do my grocery shopping, which I order from Whole Foods and then go and pick up, I can't do that on the iPhone or the iPad because the search for Whole Foods stuff on both is completely borked. So I have to sit at my Mac and do my grocery ordering in a web browser. I use different devices and apps depending on the intent of what I'm trying to buy.
Now, how much of this is our age? And how much of this is a product of where we got started with our digital world? Because there are certainly tons of young people. And I realize, by the way, that the definition of young people becomes broader the older I get. Right, but there are tons of folks who like they do everything on their phone and they don't care about another device because that's what they're used to.
I know many people who do not have a traditional computer, desktop or laptop,
yeah,
because they have a smartphone.
Yeah.
And that is all that they need for everything that they do. And I'm not saying that, like, well, they just don't do enough or they need a desktop or a laptop. It's that everything that they could possibly want to do, there is an option for doing it on their smartphone.
Sure. And that's, yeah. Yeah, until we have the next big major paradigm shift, I imagine that more and more digital consumption in particular, and actually digital production too, is going to shift to mobile devices, and including and maybe even especially smartphones.
You know, if I know I've said this before, and even with the way I have transitioned how I'm using my devices since the pandemic started, if I could have a whole fully functioning ecosystem for me that involved iPad Pro and iPhone, I honestly wouldn't have a Mac anymore.
Hmm. That's weird.
It is weird, but at the same time, with the way I have or had been using my iPad, I mean, I was on a trajectory where eventually the operating system and apps were going to catch up with the way I was trying to use my device.
Yeah.
And then my next Mac at that point would have been a Mac Mini. And then my next Mac after that would have not been a Mac at all. At that point, I would have just been iPad all the way.
That's super interesting. So again, I would love to hear stories from our listeners. Either opinions about the nonsense that we're spewing or their own nonsense that they want to spew at us, or just, you know, some observation or anecdote, whatever you've got. I'd be super interested in hearing it. And again, you can send that to acm@macobserver.com. And I would appreciate that.
This is a spew safe zone.
It is a spew. Well, yeah, every single
every week. Spew is sacred.
Every. Oh, wow. Oh, man. And unfortunately, now I'm going to tell you about Wealthfront, our other sponsor. Very excited about this sponsor. Now, a lot of investment apps make it easy to start trading, but just because it's easy to do doesn't mean you know what you're doing. And that's what makes Wealthfront different. They make it easy to invest, and they make it easy to get smarter about investing. If you want to invest for the long term, it helps to invest on your terms. Maybe you're a pro solar cannabis supporter. Maybe you're an emerging market crypto nerd like me. Whoever you are, you should invest in what you believe in. And that's what makes Wealthfront so great. After answering just a couple of questions, Wealthfront will build you a diversified portfolio of low-cost index funds in minutes. You can also build your own portfolio with, you know, clean energy funds, crypto trusts, again, cannabis stuff, tech, and hundreds of other investments. Wealthfront even offers a socially responsible portfolio. That's a mix of funds that are built around human rights, climate change, sustainability, and diversity. Kind of guessing that probably hits home with a lot of our listeners here. Best of all, Wealthfront is totally automated. They do all the trading, all the rebalancing, and they even help you lower your tax bill while you invest. That could be why Wealthfront is trusted with over $27 billion in assets, helping nearly 500,000 people build their wealth. Now, to start building your wealth, get your first $5,000 managed for free for life. Go to wealthfront.com/ACM. That's wealthfront.com/ACM to start building your wealth. And one more time, that's wealthfront.com/ACM and get started today. Jeff, let's see here. We have the other it's the thing I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk. You see, you have a long history, and you're a comic book guy. You're not the comic book guy.
I was sitting here holding my breath, waiting to see what the long history thing was going to be. And yeah, comic books. Let's go with that. Yes.
So we've talked about this this thing. Huxley was my first dip into NFTs. We've talked about that, and I was, again, before the show, I made a comment about how I thought that NFTs were a way, probably going to be a very significant way for comic books to truly transition to digital. And then we started a back and forth, and I realized that was going to be our third topic. So, mm-hmm. So his background, what Huxley is a graphic novel. It's a sort of dystopian, far future kind of story. There are multiple issues. Issue 2 just got released. I own one issue 1 and I own one issue 2. You buy them with Ethereum in a single issue. To mint a single issue is 0.1 Ethereum, which is currently, let me look at the price. It's right around $400, which is, you know, a lot of money for a graphic novel, but you know, welcome to the world of NFTs. At this particular moment, that would be $397.13. Plus, you're going to be paying Ethereum gas for the transaction, and then you have one of 10,000 of these issues. And the NFT basically allows a couple of things. First of all, he's not going through a publisher. The artist and writer. And secondly, he's able to release these with a specific number of these digital copies through the NFT concept, which to me reintroduces collectability to the world of digital comic books.
Yes, and I think it's actually cool that that you're taking an interest in collectible comics.
Yeah, it was really actually more of an interest. It was a way. The story is very interesting. The story is very good, and I was interested in the story, but I think I was more interested in actually finally dipping my toes into owning an NFT. And I thought that this particular concept, this idea of having a graphic novel with limited copies as an NFT, it was a way for me to dip my toes into the NFT world. And both of those reasons are probably for me more important than the fact that I'm dipping into the world of comic books. It was like more of an entree new into the world of NFTs as opposed to the world of comic books. But whatever, that's mostly pedantic. And you were saying you made the comment that you thought that NFTs and comic books are you didn't say like power grab. What'd you say?
How did I say it? I didn't say opportunistic grab, but I think I did use the word grab. So the comic book industry, or at least comic book artists, making a grab into the NFT space. I think that this is a natural thing for different artists or publishers to do, to kind of feel out the space and see if NFT is a good fit for this type of content.
Well, I would this particular person bypassed publishers for good or for ill. I am, you know, as longtime listeners may remember, I am an aspiring fiction author. And I believe in the good things that a publisher and publishing editors can bring to most written works. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that is as pertinent to the graphic novel. I kind of feel like the artists maintained a lot more control over their work with the graphic novel world than traditional, or you know, not traditional fiction.
It depends. When you see indie content being made, which of course you see in I'll call it more traditional writing. No, because both have been around for so long. In text only.
Yeah, text only.
You can see a lot of garbage out there, and you can see a lot of stuff where people are self-publishing and they clearly need an editor. But at the same time, there will be gems that come out of that, and stuff that needs to be out there and wouldn't have been out there if they had gone through the more traditional publishing system. And it's the same thing with comic books and graphic novels. I mean, there are indie creators out there that are making straight up garbage. But there's also people out there that are making some really compelling content.
Yeah.
And the need for editors there is just as critical as it is anywhere else.
Okay, fair enough. All fair. And by the way, I want to note that anyone who thinks that I'm a nut job for spending $400 on a graphic novel, I get it. That's a completely reasonable take. Participating in the crypto space, and I do own several cryptos, and having any familiarity whatsoever with the NFT space definitely skews or shifts, you know, skews at the less complimentary angle, or shifts at the more complimentary angle, your perspective on what digital properties may be worth.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I mean, you know, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. All right. So the collectability part.
Yes.
And I totally get how, because these issues are presented as NFT, it generates a scarcity, which in turn, makes it more likely that these become collectible products. And
they're not collectible if you're if you have a subscription to a publisher, right? And mm-hmm. and you're in, I mean, they're not collectible. You don't even right. really own them. You're renting them.
Yeah. So actually, you're bringing up a good point right there. The comic book subscription options, and all the major publishers have them. Mm-hmm. It's like Apple offering music subscriptions, or Tidal, or Spotify, or whoever. You don't own any of the music. You just own the right to be able to play music.
Right.
And it's the same when you get a comic book subscription. But it also comes with the same benefit, which is you suddenly have access to a massive library of previously made content, plus current content that's coming out today, tomorrow, next week, next year. And it gives you a much wider range of content to consume,
which is good in it. I mean, like, there's a whole wealth of benefits and goodness from that idea too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In no way whatsoever am I bagging on comic book subscriptions. Comic book subscriptions were definitely a way for comic book publishers to survive in the age of, you know, digital consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that. What I think is very interesting, though, is, like I said, this way of reintroducing collectability into the graphic novel comic book space. And that is something that NFTs so far uniquely can do.
And I find it interesting that you say reintroducing collectability, because from my perspective, it never went away. That's something that has stayed on the print side. And there's a bunch of historic graphic novels that are very collectible in their original prints or runs. And that would be things like Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen and totally not humble brag. Yes, I have both as the original run issues. And holy crap, it's really cool to have those as collectibles. And you can still get new graphic novels that are coming out today. And they have the same potential to be collectible as the older things that I have stashed away in my collection. They just happen to be in print as opposed to digital. And even for regular run comics, so not graphic novels, just like, you know, regular series, there's collectability that's been there for a long time too. And in one of the common ways to do that is to make limited runs of specific issue covers. And for people that are really into comic collectability, they have never lost the ability to have that scarcity, that special issue, the limited run, that's all been there. The change with NFT is that now we see someone doing the experiment where they can show us whether or not, at least in this one instance, if digital can have the collectability value as well.
All right, fair enough. And we'll see. It is an interesting development, one way or another. What becomes of it, we don't know. But it is an interesting development. All right, Jeff. Unfortunately, our time has come to an end.
Oh, and I was just getting ramped up with my comic book nerd out. Ugh.
Oops.
But okay.
That is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And our sponsors this week were ZocDoc and Wealthfront. We appreciate them very, very much. Jeff, tell us where we can find you.
I'm easy to find. Instagram, as you already mentioned, and Twitter. I'm Jay Gamut on both. Mm-hmm. YouTube.com/JayGamut for my videos. And you're going to start picking up on a pattern here. Patreon and Buy Me a Coffee, Jay Gamut. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Righto.
Yeah, I've been hosting The Big Show and The Mac Show on British Tech Network. I still call myself the interim host, but some people say that I should drop the interim part.
You consult with Steve. Consult with Steve on that. All right, and on that happy note, thanks for joining us, and happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you, Brian.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.